From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, nearly 5,000 people are about to descend on Columbus, Indiana for a Scottish festival. Hoosier singer-songwriter Jeff Byrd is coming to town with new tunes, and we learn what heavy metal and classical guitar have in common. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of this and more is right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, Jill Dittmeyer gets a concert preview from one of the Texas tenors. But first up, singer-songwriter Jeff Byrd and his band The Wires are partnering with Girls Inc. of Johnson County for a concert. Hoosier Music Fest features blues, rock, and classic rock bands at Hoosier Brewhouse in Franklin. Melissa Davis learns more, and Jeff has a song to share.
Well, Jeff Byrd, thank you for stopping by The Art of the Matter today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And so you'll be playing at the Hoosier Music Fest.
Right. We've got a day lineup. September 9th is the Music Fest, and we have six bands that are going to play. Dane Clark Band, he's probably best known as the drummer for John Mellencamp currently, and he's a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist in his own right, and his band will be there. The Tony Burton Band, Tony's a guy who's been in a lot of local bands, Larry Crane Band, Roadmaster, well-known in the Indianapolis community. And we've got my band, Jeff Byrd and the Wires. We have a well-known band in the Franklin area, from Franklin actually, called Brother O' Brother, playing around Fountain Square in Indianapolis, so they're pretty well-known. The Jeremy Vogt Band, Americana Roots Rockers, from Indianapolis as well. And then Frank Dean, who's actually a Franklin resident, has a guitar shop down in Franklin, but also he's a longtime, a studio musician, played with a lot of bands, best known locally as being in Syndicato. So really great lineup of artists, and it's $10 admission. It's hosted by the Hoosier Brewhouse. So they are they have a restaurant and tap room in Franklin, Indiana, but their line of craft beers are under the brand name Hoosier Brewery. So they are loaning us their parking lot. So it's going to be like an outdoor kind of block party type of setup. So we hope it'll be a really fun night for everybody and raise some money for a good cause.
Cool. And why did you personally decide to become involved with Girls Incorporated?
Well, originally it was through my work. I work for a job training program for 16 to 24-year-olds called Job Corps. And we provide training certifications, mostly construction-based. And so we met Girls Inc. Just in the community, and their executive director, Sonia Ware-McGuire, she came out and provided some women's programming for our females, and we got to talking, and then I found out about their facility, and we did some construction work for them. It's a good association because it allows our students to get real-life hands-on training in the construction industry. So we went out and did some projects for them, and then we got to talking about kind of their long-term outlook for the center. We came up with the idea to do the Hoosier Music Fest, and we hope it'll go really well, and maybe it'll be something that will, you know, continue in the Franklin community and continue to maybe help other nonprofits down the road. So that's kind of the long and short of it right there.
Cool. So this is the first event and maybe more to come?
This is the inaugural Hoosier Music Fest. So, yes, we hope that, people will come out and we'll have a good showing so that we can maybe do it again next year. And as I said, as it grows, hopefully we can continue to help a lot of nonprofits there in the community. So,
And at the show, will you be performing as a solo artist?
I actually have a band that'll be backing me up. So normally I play in the Indianapolis community as a solo artist, but for this show, we're going to have a band called The Wires, and so I'm going to be doing a set as well as the five other bands that are in the lineup. So I think it's going to be pretty diverse group, but it's going to be, you know, an exciting night. 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. is when the music is running. So, but you can get there early if you want and get some food and beverages from the Hoosier Brew House.
Cool. And today you offered to play a sample of maybe what you might be playing on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm going to do a tune called To Live One Night.
It's another Friday night in a Midwest suburban life. I called up my buddy, I say, hey there, Larry Joe. His sister works late at the power and light. There'll be no beer for us tonight, but that's okay. It's not how we get there, it's the fact that we go.
Jeff Bird with his song To Live One Night from his upcoming album. You can catch them live this Saturday night, September 9th, from 5 to 11 at Hoosier Brew House in Franklin. Get the details at HoosierMusicFest.com and learn more about Jeff at JeffBirdMusic.com, and he spells Bird B-Y-R-D, JeffBirdMusic.com. Our next guest is proud of his knees. Justin Booth's knees were voted bonniest at last year's Columbus Scottish Festival, and this Columbus resident is chair of the 26th annual event. It's coming up on September 9th and 10th. I invited Justin to tell me about the Scots in the Columbus area and all that fun that awaits you whether or not you have a family tartan. To have a long-running Scottish festival, I assume there's a decent population of Scots in and around Columbus. Tell me about that.
I would say that there are a lot of expats in the area, especially in Columbus. There's a great diversity of cultures in Columbus. And yes, there's a good following, I guess, of the Scottish culture and people from the UK and Scotland specifically. Many of them I work with at the company that I'm employed.
Aha. Uh-huh. They wouldn't be Cummins, would it?
They would.
Okay. That was not too hard to guess in Columbus, right? And this is radio, so people can't see you. So I'm going to say you've got kind of a strawberry blonde thing going on there. Is it safe to say that you have a legitimate claim to being chair of this event?
As I understand it, both on my mother and father's side, I do have a wee bit of Scottish in me. Yes.
Fantastic. So this is a 26th year. I assume you've been on to be the chair. You've probably been on the committee for a while.
This is my 8th year as president. Nine year on the committee, and longer relationship with between volunteering and the local bagpipe band in Columbus.
Do you play?
Not the bagpipes, but the snare drum. So I've been in the snare drum in the local bagpipe band for 20-plus years, actually.
Holy moly, you started very young. So you've got really something for just about everybody. You have athletic activities, you have music, you have food and beverage, and a party. You've got amazing bands. Tell me about what the living history part of this is.
Well, that's a great question. And yes, I would echo your comments. We are very proud of the many different events that we offer. There is a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah.
When you come into the festival down at the Bartholomew County Fairgrounds, you will find, I think you will be immersed in the culture and the kind of like stepping back in time a little bit as soon as you walk through the gates. We'll have our living history encampment just after you enter the fairgrounds through our main entrance.
And what era does that represent?
Well, actually, as the event grows, and our Roseanne Gordon is coordinating our reenactors, and she's trying to create a timeline, a different period-centric and like period-specific eras as you walk through. And so the few groups that we have will kind of represent that. We'll have World War II encampment, so Scottish Regiment encampment there. Other like period folks that will be there. They are actually coming 2 days early to build a stone hearth oven to do cooking, and they'll do everything over the hearth and It'll be a very good display.
That's so cool. I love that idea. European Car Show is part of this?
Absolutely. We have anywhere from last few years, we've had around 20-ish, give or take, really beautiful vintage cars that have come out for the event. Drivers come from all over. One time we even had a vehicle that was shipped over from the UK to be a part of our event.
Wow.
I can't imagine the logistics and cost in that, but they did do that for our event one time. And the folks who come out to the festival can cast their vote for the People's Choice Award that we give, and then there'll be a proper judge, if you will, to judge the event. So participants can have up to at least two different awards to win a part of that European car show.
What's your typical attendance over the weekend of this festival?
We are over 4,500 to about 5,000 that will come over the 2 days. A lot of participants will come and from all over to participate. Our dancers, Highland dancers, our athletes will come from all over regionally. And the data that I've been able to collect through gate surveys is that actually over 70% of the people that come to the Columbus Scottish Festival are actually from outside Bartholomew County.
Good for you. That's great. So you lure them in with the appeal of a fabulous festival, and they get to discover everything else about Columbus while they're there.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you, you have so many events, we can't possibly do them justice, but I was drawn to the Bonniest Knees contest.
Well, I am a former winner of that
event. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's radio.
Well, that is just something for fun. On Sunday afternoon, first the ladies or the lassies have a haggis toss. And I won't go into exactly the details of the haggis itself. That is part of the surprise. But there is an event where basically it's a competition, and the ladies or lady who have thrown the haggis the farthest are then become the judge in the Bonniest Knees competition.
I see.
Where gentlemen will display their knees, and it's up to the women to decide whose are the best, the most bonny.
I'm so sorry that this is radio and you can't see Justin Booth's bonny knees, but you can see lots of men in kilts, hear Celtic music by the Mudmen, Dublin O'Shea and the Spriggs, plus bagpipe competitions. You can shop at a Celtic market, eat traditional food, dance, see a sword and knife competition, and so very much more at the 26th Columbus Scottish Festival. It's this coming weekend, September 9th and 10th, and you can get all the details for fun, whether you're a Scot or not, at scottishfestival.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Just around the corner, Jill Dittmeyer caught up with John Hagen of the Texas Tenors and learned about their upcoming appearance in Indy. But first, Eat Drink Indy's Jolene Ketzenberger is here with her weekly culinary journey.
So we're talking today with Kathleen Tracy of Movable Feast, which is celebrating 20 years in business this year. So tell me, what were you doing 20 years ago before Movable Feast?
Before Movable Feast, I was working for a local food service business, and I was doing menu planning for them and managing. And we came back from our vacation, and I quit my job.
Just like that?
Just like that. It wasn't planned. It just happened. And didn't know what I was going to do. And I'm a graphic designer. And so I was thinking about doing that. And I was like, I really love being in the food industry. And we decided to open up a catering business. And so
that's what was going on 20 years ago for you.
Yeah, 20 years ago. So that's what was going on. It was crazy. So we took all the money that we'd saved for buying a house and went around to auctions and bought a bunch of equipment.
All right. So what were some of the early things that did sell on the original menu?
We have a lot of things that are still on our menu, like the turkey pesto provolone. What else is still on there? The turkey Reuben, that's still on there. One of the things that we did not have that we sell the most of is soup. I make so much soup. It's crazy. We did not have that on the menu at all. And so we just kind of went along. Well, we were going to be doing just like catering, and then we kind of opened, became a lunch business. And so things just kind of evolved.
So what was the original plan 20 years ago, launching a food business?
It was going to be catering and like grab and go. And then when we got in our facility and we were there working and doing stuff, we were like, where are these people eating for lunch? And it was just all fast food around us.
And that was at 71st and Binford, right? The tiny little building.
Right, tiny little building. There was a Taco Bell. There was a Dairy Queen. There was a Rally's. There was a Burger King or Burger, I don't know, Steak and Shake. All of the fast food, they were all there. And then there was us with no fountain drinks and no fried food.
Now, you didn't have a fryer, right? You weren't making French fries or anything?
No French fries or anything. And here we are trying to get people to eat like raw veggie salad with a balsamic vinaigrette. And so,
well, now they must have been interested enough to keep coming back.
They were interested enough to keep coming back. And we had a solid following of people who traveled a lot. And that's who we're catering to, is mostly people who ate out a lot in business in different cities. And they were like, thank God you're here. Thank God you're here. So it was fun.
So how did that grow? You know, how did you bring people along and, you know, so that focaccia becomes an everyday thing?
Well, it's interesting. We had actually had a fax list, and we would fax out the menu every day. And
fax
every day to the businesses, and we would ask them to put it up in the break rooms. And so they would put it up in the break rooms, and some of the people would come over and be adventurous, and you know, let the people thought, oh my God, you're so expensive, and I was just like, it's really inexpensive. So it. That was part of the way. It was just word of mouth, basically. Word of mouth. We didn't do any advertising. We still don't.
Well, you know, that's such a, in a business with such very slim margins, there really isn't a lot of room for that often, you know?
There isn't. You're absolutely right. You're right.
So you do have to rely on your customers. So did you start to notice a change in them, or did you start to notice them becoming more adventuresome along the way somewhere?
A little of both. What was really interesting is watching our customers bring their kids in, and then we would do the graduation parties for the kids, and then the college graduation, and then the kids are getting married, and now they're bringing their kids in, and you're just like, holy wow.
Well, when you've been around for 20 years, I guess that happens.
That's right. It absolutely happens.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, Actors Theater of Indiana and classical guitar performers. But right now, Indiana Public Broadcasting is saluting Vietnam veterans on September 13th with a preview of the new PBS Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War, plus a concert by the Texas Tenors. And WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer checked it out for us.
The Texas Tenors have performed numerous times here in Indianapolis, and of course, PBS fans just saw their brand new special, which was called Rise. We aired that on FYI during August, and I got to talk with one of the tenors, John Hagen, right here in our studio just a few weeks ago, and we talked about the upcoming Indiana salute to military vets and the music they're going to choose, and we also talked about how he, J.C. Fisher, and Marcus Collins became the Texas Tenors.
Well, it was actually J.C.'s idea of putting together a couple of his friends to audition for that talent show, America's Got Talent, back in 2009. We all knew each other, but we didn't work together. J.C. and Marcus had worked together at one time, but it was his idea. He had this vision of taking three different kinds of tenors, putting it together and auditioning for the show and see what we got, and things worked out all right.
And how did you decide to really embellish the military and veterans and really kind of honor them in many of your performances?
Well, we've actually done that since day one. All three of us have family members who were military and veterans, and it's been an important thing for us. And we've been involved in many causes over the years, but that's the one that is always constant and will always be a constant for us.
What do people say to you about that?
We hear some incredible stories. It's an incredibly moving thing for us in the show. We do it in every show. We sang it in the UK. We sang God Bless the USA in the UK. They loved it. It's a special moment. And even though we may have sung the song 12, 13, 1400 times, you still have to be careful not to cross that line as a performer, to become so emotional that you can't finish it, because it never ceases to amaze me that after that many shows, there's a night when I'm barely staying on this side of it. And I look out there and you see people reacting either through tears or some kind of emotion. And then you hear incredible stories after the show from people who've had a loss in the family or whatever. And what we also realize is when we do recognize the veterans in the show, there's so many people that stand up, you realize how connected we all are that way. Everybody knows somebody, whether it's in your family, a neighbor, whatever, coworker. Everybody's connected that way somehow. So it's something that we need to always be aware of, I think.
And speaking of emotions and stories, you're going to be here in Indianapolis to help us. We're going to have the preview of Ken Burns's The Vietnam War documentary. Wow.
Yeah, that's going to be a great, great event. We're really looking forward to it. Vietnam is that conversation that maybe hasn't been finished. And we're looking forward to seeing the documentary, but we're also looking very much forward to that evening to performing some great patriotic songs, some songs that will uplift people. It's going to be a real special evening. We're very honored to be part of it.
Do you remember the Vietnam War? Were you even born then?
I do. I remember my dad was a school teacher, and I remember him coming home from school, and I remember sitting at his feet by the recliner while he was watching the news. And I don't remember any specifics, but I remember it. I remember seeing footage of the combat. And, you know, so I'm just old enough to not know much of what was going on at that time, but aware enough that as time went on, of course, learning a lot about it, and had neighbors that had maybe an older brother or somebody that was involved in it. And it's something that is very important. I think needs to be talked about some more.
Have you had Vietnam vets that have come to your previous shows?
Oh, absolutely.
Come up to you?
Yeah. And many of them, and I say many, and I mean that, have said, thank you so much for recognizing the veterans, because, you know, we weren't really thanked when we came home. And so, you know, it's a special moment for us, I think, as a community and a country to thank these people.
Music was such a powerful part of that whole Vietnam era, too. And there were really a wide variety of music. There was a whole music scene going on here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And a different yet similar scene going on over there with the veterans.
Yeah.
How do you go about selecting the songs that you want to include in this performance that celebrates their service, yet, as you said, this is a conversation that's still ongoing that is very, very touchy for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Well, that night we'll be doing some things that most people have heard, and then we're going to be doing some things that some original songs that one of them is a patriotic original song called Wheels. That will speak to everybody. We'll be doing some songs like the title song from our special called Rise, which is a song of hope and inspiration, seizing the moment, making the most of every day. Things, reasons why we do what we do, why we fight to keep freedom. So it's going to be a special evening. I think there's going to be something there for everybody, obviously. And I don't think you're going to want to miss it.
Well, and music is the tool that brings everybody together. So you three, you have a significant role in this.
We're so honored to be asked to be part of this. And so we're giving it a lot of thought and preparation because we want to make the most of the opportunity and do the best we can to make the evening special.
And what kind of conversation do you want people to leave with after they enjoy the event?
Well, first and foremost, I think, you know, people, the veterans that are going to be there that are being recognized need to feel that thanks for what they did. You know, no matter where you stand on the specifics of things, you know, anybody who served has made an incredible sacrifice, and that just can't be overlooked, I think. So I hope people walk away with a feeling of gratefulness, of hope. And an uplifted feeling. One of the things that we try to do is uplift people and look forward.
You also have the ability then to kind of influence the next generation as well and to that what they learn about this war, about the hopefully future wars, but who knows? You guys are really in an interesting position.
It is, and it's interesting to see younger people, the younger people who come and maybe haven't been exposed to a moment where veterans are honored in a concert or something like that. And maybe they go away thinking about that a little bit, even just plant that tiny seed so that those that don't have an immediate connection in their family or something, give it a thought, you know, that don't, you know, you shouldn't take this life that we have here for granted. It's a very precious and special thing.
The event takes place at 7:30 on Wednesday, September 13th at the Murat Theater at the Old National Center in downtown Indianapolis. And in addition to the concert, there will also be a preview of that Vietnam War documentary that airs on PBS later this month. There are discount tickets for military veterans, and you can get all of that information and your tickets online right now at WFYI.org/events.
Fantastic. Can't wait to hear and see both the Texas Tenors and that amazing special that's been in the works for so many years. We have lots of other things that you might want to put on your calendar in our calendar segment we call What'll We Do? Well, I made the short trip down to Columbus, Indiana last week, not to see somebody's bonny knees, but to check out Exhibit Columbus, which is so much fun. I encourage you to take a little road trip. It's very family-friendly. Fascinating installations, 18 of them in all. It's kind of like a scavenger hunt. You go around town sort of collecting them, and you can go online to exhibitcolumbus.org and get a map. But many of them are lit up at night. Most of them are deeply interactive. You can climb on them or make noise on them. Lots of fun.
Another family-friendly thing starts on September the 9th and runs on a number of Saturday nights thereafter up at Clay Terrace. They are hosting their first year of Movies on the Lawn, and it gets darker earlier, so that works for this because the start time is at about 7 o'clock in the evening on the lawn right up there in Clay Terrace. They're free, and the first week, of course, is going to be Princess Night. They're going to be showing Beauty and the Beast. And then on Saturday, September 16th, it's Pet Night. You're encouraged to bring your pet. They'll be showing The Secret Life of Pets. It's Superhero Night on September the 23rd with The Avengers. And then on September the 30th, it's Moana. It's Beach Night. So all of those, the show time's at 7 o'clock, free for the entire family. Of course, there's all kinds of restaurants up there. You can bring your own picnic. Great way to see movies outdoors in the fall.
Wow, I was just mentally ticking through the props I'll need for that. Let's see, tiara, check, for the Princess Night. A couple of cats, yep, for Secret Life of Pets. I think I have some sort of tropical print for Moana.
There's your September, Sharon.
There we
go.
Well, Saturday, September 9th, you're going to have to make a lot of choices. It's the annual Penrod Arts Fair, among other things. But also, if you still have some energy that Saturday night, a fascinating, sure to be fascinating talk from 7:30 to 9 at Clues Memorial Hall. Our own John Krall from No Limits having a conversation with Gold Star father and attorney Kazir Khan. It's a community conversation on unity and civility, and it's free, but you do need to get a ticket before you go. And the way to do that is conversation with Kazir, K-H-I-Z-R. eventbrite.com. That's coming up Saturday night, September 9th.
And if you don't want to go hear the lecture and you don't want to go to the movie, Saturday, September 9th, you can go to the French Market. It's time, once again, after you come out and visit with us at Penrod, head over there to St. Joan of Arc for their annual All Things French and Fun Bash in the back parking lot. It's a great night for everybody.
This Saturday night, September 2nd, Craig Brenner, you may be recognize his name as the organizer of the Boogie Woogie Piano Festival that happened a couple of weeks ago in Bloomington. He is performing with his group called Craig and the Crawdads at Mallow Run Winery. That's in Bargersville, so go out and enjoy a nice evening of live music and maybe a little glass or two of wine.
If we haven't offered you anything that you're interested in, go to the indiearts.org/guide. It's the Arts Council of Indianapolis' guide. Or join us again next week, and we'll bring you that calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, what do classical and heavy metal guitar have in common? Stay tuned to find out. But first, Actors Theatre of Indiana launches its new season with two quite different shows, La Cage aux Folles and A Grand Night for Singing. I asked co-founder and associate artistic director Cynthia Collins and director of marketing and development Kristen Merritt to tell me how the company finds artistic balance and why they like their intimate space at the Center for the Performing Arts. Hey, what number of season is this for ATI now?
13th.
No.
Yes, 13 years.
That was fast. Circle back.
You better believe
crazy.
It.
Remind me of the mission.
We are the Professional Equity Theater Company at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. And, you know, basically the mission is we're bringing live professional theater to the community. And we are in Hamilton County, it's true, but we are central. You know, we're trying to reach central Indiana.
Yeah.
Just like the Center of the Performing Arts is trying mm-hmm. to do, mm-hmm. is to reach out. Not just in Marion and Hamilton and Boone counties, but, you know, throughout the central state. So, and also part of the mission is to engage people in educate and, of course, entertain,
yeah.
you know? So those three things. And to make it a real experience when you come to see a show.
Yeah.
One of our shows at Actors
Theater. And your venue is intimate, so...
Very.
This is... What I like about how you've interpreted your mission is you bring big shows. A lot of them have been wild successes on Broadway. But you bring them to a venue where you're not, you know, 1,000 people away from the stage.
And it... Well, you know what makes that so great is because... And it's a 200-seat. You're right. Intimate.
Yeah.
Just a 200-seat
mm-hmm.
thrust configuration. And what makes it so great is... like to bring the bigger shows that have been scaled down to, say, our example, we did Sweeney Todd two mm-hmm. seasons ago.
Mm-hmm. Big show.
Big show. But we did it, actually, we did it how Sondheim originally envisioned it.
Mm-hmm.
He did not envision a big show when he wrote Sweeney Todd.
Interesting.
He envisioned a smaller chamber musical.
Huh.
So we had Richard J. Roberts, of course, directing. He's brilliant from the IRT. And people, oh, my gosh, people went nuts. And what they say is, and we've also done that with My Fair Lady. And we also did it with Gypsy. And we're doing it
Cabaret.
We did it with Cabaret. And we're doing it with La Cage,
mm-hmm.
you know, this season. Is what it does is it strips away all the, how can I put this? It gets to the core of the story. So you really see the writing. So you really see the story.
There's okay. no place for performers to hide.
There's no place for a performer to hide. There's no place to do bells and whistles. You are seeing the core of this show, the way the composer and lyricist and playwright intended.
And expanding on that, being in the studio theater, I always say it hits all of the senses. You know, you can feel it. You can, of course, see it and hear it. You can smell it. To some degree, you can almost touch it because we stage it so often where the actors are up
mm-hmm.
in near the seats and they're looking at the audience members. Mm-hmm. And it's a very intimate experience, really unlike any other, truly.
I don't know if there's anything like it here. You know, of course, this intimacy is not nothing new.
No.
But as far as...
Branded to our theater.
Branded to us, yeah. And yeah. being in this area, I don't know if there's anything else.
Well, and that's why people, I think, still go to theater. And it's also why people, you know, you're going to have somebody in your house who saw La Cage on Broadway years ago,
mm-hmm.
but who wants to see it anew and is going to come away seeing it differently. And speaking of things people have seen before, A Grand Night for Singing is such a fun... amalgam. Explain what it is.
It is because it's is obviously it's a review mm-hmm. of the R&H songbook with Rodgers and Hammerstein. And this is really interesting because they have taken Rodgers and Hammerstein and they have, and this is what's so great actually about Rodgers and Hammerstein. You can take that music and you can arrange it however you mm-hmm. want. There are jazz arrangements in this show, blues arrangements in this show. How do you solve a problem like Maria? It's sung by a man. So they really took their canon and really made it very, very interesting. You know, so you'll hear different arrangements of Rodgers and Hammerstein. Not crazy. You know, of course, you're going to know it's a song. Mm-hmm. But you say, oh, my gosh, Kansas City. Oh, wow. It's a Manhattan. It's basically a Manhattan Transfer arrangement.
Oh, fun.
And Honey Bun is a huge tap number. So it really did some interesting stuff with it. And so that's what makes it. That's actually does make it fun.
And we've talked about just the beginning of the season, and we'll, of course, have you back when we get to spring. But mm-hmm. Subscriptions available now. Subscriber benefits, including first crack at tickets to a year with Frog
and
Toad.
Yeah, I mean, subscriptions as low as $125. Subscriber sales go on until October 1, to the very last day of the first production.
Cindy Collins is co-founder and associate artistic director of Actors Theater of Indiana, and Kristen Merritt is director of marketing and development. ATI opens the season with La Cage aux Folles September 15th through October 1st. ATIstage.org is where to find tickets and check out the rest of the new season. So, what's the connection between heavy metal guitar and traditional classical guitar techniques? Contributor Pete Brown sat down with John Alvarado, president of the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar, to discuss that concept and learn about their upcoming season.
All right, John, we're here today to talk about the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar. Tell me a little bit about the history.
Sure, yeah. Well, there's actually even a longer history. Apparently, this is something that existed back in the 1970s.
Oh, wow.
For whatever reason, kind of, you know, as these things often do, kind of went defunct and lost participation.
Sure.
But the version that we are existing in now began around 2006. It started basically, so I moved here in 2002, and I got to know several of the guitar players around town here. And what we kind of discovered pretty quickly was that there were a number of really experienced and talented classical guitarists in Indianapolis.
Oh.
I mean, Butler University has had a guitar program for years. Mm. University of Indianapolis had one. There was one at Marion, and there was one at IUPUI at the time. But there was no real sense of a classical guitar community. Mm. It was just kind of classical guitarists existing, all thinking that they were doing their own thing.
Sure.
And so what we really wanted was a chance to build really a sense of a classical guitar community here. And so we began... we had our first meeting. It was in the basement of a church somewhere, just to kind of gauge some interest. And different teachers brought their students. And, it really began as a lot of classical guitar societies do, more as kind of a club where people got together and played for one another. But it's kind of grown from there and become a center for bringing international artists also to Indianapolis to perform.
Sure.
Probably one of the biggest things we do right now is our guest artist series that we host every year.
Sure.
Where we have between 4 to 6 concerts featuring artists from all around the world, as well as some local and regional players as well. Just top talent.
And that's kicking off soon. That's kicking off this fall in September, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Who's coming this year that you would, you know, especially like to point out?
Well, we're kicking it off. We always start the series with our annual fundraiser concert, which is a lot of fun. We have regional guitarists from around Indiana who are associated with the society. I'll be playing on that one. Mm. Brett Terrell, who's been the director of the guitar program at Butler for years, will be performing on that. Nemanja Ostoich, who's the director of the guitar program at University of Indianapolis, will be performing on that. And then Dan Quinn, who's based up in Fort Wayne. Dan's an interesting one because he does... he's a specialist in guitar music of Japan.
Oh, wow.
Which is not something people think a lot of. People think of classical guitar, they always think of the Spanish tradition.
Sure.
And European traditions. But he's got a great repertoire of Japanese guitarists and composers. And then after that, we've got some really great artists coming up. We're going to kick off our first visiting one will be Jérôme Mouffe, who's a Belgian guitarist, but he's currently based in Boston.
Okay.
I believe he was actually the first guitarist to receive the doctorate in musical arts from the New England Conservatory in Boston, and now he's on the faculty there as well. After that, we're going to have in November Javier Jara, who's the winner of the Guitar Foundation of America International Performance Competition. But part of the prize for winning the GFA competition is, in addition to the cash prize, they also get a recording contract with Noxus CDs to record an album. And they also get a tour that's co-sponsored by the GFA and various artists. So I think they usually play about 50 dates on that tour.
What's the connection there between modern music and kind of the classical tradition?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing in that, you know, I often joke that if you scratch the surface of any classical guitarist raised in the United States, you're going to find a heavy metal guitar player in there. I mean, I've known so many who've come from that background.
Yeah.
And because of the complexity of that style and the technical challenges that are involved in playing that style, that a lot of times they'll go from there and just kind of say, well, I want to grow even more.
Yeah.
And they'll find this other style as well. I mean, you listen to some of the caprices for guitar and things that are just amazingly technically virtuosic, and they really appeal to players who've come from that kind of shredder background.
Sure.
And they discover then from there this whole other world of musical expression. You know, and it's funny you say, you know, people think that people will say, you know, classical guitar is not for me. And it's strange because I've kind of come to feel more and more bothered by the idea of any type of music not being for anybody.
Yeah.
You know? In that, you know, this idea of musical styles is somehow kind of tribes that we have to stay in.
Yeah,
you know, there was
a
great quote that I heard from an artist who somebody was asking her about a different style or a competing artist. And she said, well, the beauty of today's world is, you know, there's room on my iPhone for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, I can listen to all of it and I can carry it all around. And so I think the guitar in particular, I think, is such a great connection between those genres because it's an instrument that's heard in all of them. So I think it's really easy for people to kind of come to classical guitar because it's a familiarity to this instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with maybe other classical instruments that they don't see in popular music, they may have a harder time envisioning that kind of closing that gap. But with guitar, because it's such a huge cultural figure in American popular music, it's an easy thing for me to kind of segue into.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having been a fan of so many different styles, for me, I think one of the mistakes that's often made when people try to convert people to classical music is they'll say, you know, the music you like isn't very good. Listen to this instead.
Right, right.
And that's immediately off-putting, I think, to a lot of people.
Sure.
So I come to it more of, you know, that's really interesting what you like about that.
Yeah.
Here's some other styles that utilize some things that I think you might be interested in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's actually the way I feel. It's not, I don't think of it as a gimmick. I find appeal in so many different styles. I tell a lot of people I'm a very promiscuous guitarist, or promiscuous musician. You know, I love all these different styles, but in the end, I always come back home to my classical guitar because that's where my training and it's where my skill set lies.
Yeah,
fair enough. But I mean, there'll be days I'm driving around and I'll hear some Doc Watts and I'll think, oh, forget all this. I'm going to be a steel string picker.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I pick it up and I realize that I have no skill with the pick. Uh-huh. So I go back to my finger style playing. So I've come more and more to kind of just think of myself as a guitarist.
Yeah.
You know, rather than a classical guitarist, even though that's the music that I primarily play.
Sure. What do you think is the power of the live experience and keeping ourselves immersed in that and encouraging others to get into the live performance side of it?
Right. I think, for me, I think live music is absolutely 100% where it's at. I would much rather sit in an auditorium and listen to a classical guitar concert than have it on a CD
sure.
in the background. I just think there's something about being in that room and hearing the subtlety of the instrument in the room and seeing what the artist is doing. That just makes it so much more real. It's interesting because I actually have this conversation with students all the time because at IUPUI, you know, I require all my students to do concert reports.
Sure.
You know, music is a strange art form in that to see theater, you need to actually go to the venue and watch a play, right?
Sure.
To see great sculpture, great historic paintings, you typically need to go to a gallery or to a museum.
Mm-hmm.
But music is constantly around us.
Yeah.
You know, I was at Starbucks this morning doing a little bit of work, and in that time I heard some jazz, I heard some African music, I heard some pop music, mm-hmm. and I heard all this stuff. But I wasn't really listening to it.
Right.
It was just kind of there in the background while I worked, and I think that's the problem. That live music experience where you're sitting in a room with your devices off and you're actually 100% engaging with it, it's such a different experience. And I think it's really the way that artists intend their work to be heard.
Contributor Pete Brown with John Alvarado, president of the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar, discussing their upcoming performance season, the power of live performance, and the classical guitar's connection to other musical genres. To learn more, visit indianaguitar.org. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and I'm here with Sarah Grain of Sarah Grain and the Billions of Stars. They have a new album out titled Something Wild, and the release party is happening Saturday, September 9th, in the catacombs underneath City Market. Right, Sarah?
That's right.
And you can go to sarahgrain.com to purchase tickets and find more information about the show. Why did you choose that location for your release party?
I chose that location because it's a destination place. It's a place that many people have wanted to go and haven't found the opportunity. And what better opportunity than to listen to music and party and experience kind of the mystique.
And it's a special album, and you wanted a special location for the show. Give us a few words about Something Wild.
Well, Something Wild is the culmination of about 3 years of work with my band, Sarah Grain and the Billions of Stars, with Ryan Cook on drums, Nate Gray on bass, Doug Sauter on guitar, and Mina Cohane on keys. And we practice and record down at Arc Barn Studio in Ryan Cook's recording studio that's under the Billions of Stars down there, because it's on his family farm. So it's a really special place where we recorded, and many other Indianapolis musicians have been able to record as well.
And you have five songs to share with us today, Sarah, five songs that have influenced you in some way. What is your first song for us?
Well, I love Brazilian music. Brazilian music has really influenced me. So my first song is by an artist called Seu. It's C-E-U, and it's a song called Rainha, which means queen.
De água pra ela beber, de roupa pra ela vestir, saúde pra dar e vender. De paz pra ela descansar, adubo pra ela crescer, de rosas pra ela enfeitar.
My second song is Laura Peace Kelly. She's an artist, educator, and poet from Seattle, Washington, and I love just the energy of her songs. Her ability, her vocals, her subject material, and her ability as an MC are just unparalleled in my mind. Number three is Greg Brown. This song is called Spring Wind. And Greg Brown has definitely been the most influential songwriter on my journey as a songwriter. He weaves joy, sorrow, whimsy, and poignancy, like, all into the same song. And listening to this song and to really any Greg Brown song kind of brings forward my humanity.
Beneath the tree where we once talked of an old couple burning their love letters so their children won't be shocked. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day. The spring wind blew my list of things to do away.
And number four, Sarah.
So this song is called Si Vas Para Chile by Liliana Herrero. She's from Argentina. And the guitar and clarinet and percussion in the song always put me in this trance. It's this beautiful song where a lover is telling a traveler, oh, if you go to Chile, si vas para Chile, go to this tiny little town, look for the woman that's crying and tell her that I'm dying of love for her. And throughout the song, it kind of crescendos up into this massive just calling out and yearning. And it just breaks my heart every time.
And your fifth and final song for us today, Sarah Grain.
This song, September Fields by Frazee Ford, just puts me in a good mood. The song is the song of my summer 2017. It's been what I've put on every morning when I get in my car and go somewhere. Her backup band on this album is Al Green's backup band. So it's like listening to Al Green, but with like a contemporary female vocalist. And it just gets me in the right mood every time.
And Sarah, the new album is titled Something Wild. The release party is happening in the Catacombs September 9th at 8 p.m. And folks can go to sarahgrain.com for more information, right?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Pete Brown, Melissa Davis, and Jill Dittmeyer. You can hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 and join us Thursday nights at 8. And you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Coming soon, we're taking over the airwaves at WFYI Radio. Saturday morning at 7, tune in for some of our favorite interviews from the past year, and then listen again from 11 to 2 when we'll be live at the 51st Annual Penrod Arts Fair. We'll bring you interviews about the American Pianists Association, the Indie Folk Series, Butler's new theater season, and lots more, and we'll get the inside story about the IMA's new campus name. And, of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.